Hello, everyone. My name is Greg, and welcome back to the podcast, my first season. In this podcast, I interview people who worked in holiday ski resorts, hotel, and cruise ships, and we'll talk about their first season in the hospitality and tourism industry. We both worked together in Club Med Columbus Isle in 99-2000. That's right. We survived Y2K and lived to tell about it. Everyone, you know her, you love her, Miss Angie Boucher. Angie, how are you?
Yay! I'm doing pretty damn good.
All right. So happy to have you on. You're like, wow, landing like Brad Pitt or Angelina Jolie on the podcast. This is incredible. The living legend herself on my humble podcast. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this.
Of course, darling. Anything for you. We have to have our sushi bushi times again.
Yes. Yes, we do. We'll get to that nickname in a moment. But right now, yeah, so you know the drill. I'm really interested because we know a lot about you, but probably not a lot of people know about your first season in Club Med. So I want you to take us back in time to where you were, what you were doing for work, and how you found out about Club Med. And maybe if you don't want to give the year, that's okay. If you want to give the year, that's fine. Up to you.
Well, first I need to brace yourself to not be too shocked. Okay.
All right.
So my first season, I was 18 years old. It was 1985.
Okay.
And I was, long story short, I had broke up with a boyfriend, and to get back at him, I applied to Club Med.
Wait, where were you living?
I was living in the East Bay outside of San Francisco.
Were you going to school or working?
No, actually, I had just finished teaching dancing. I started teaching dancing when I was 13 years old till 18. And then I took a more, responsible position, but then I took a serious position so that I could wear a suit in the city, working at the Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank doing wire remittances.
Can we go back to the dancing? What kind of dancing were you teaching?
Tap, jazz, Tahitian, acrobats, and Hawaiian, and funk.
Wow. And then you went to become a banker.
Correct.
Okay. That's the logical step. Sure. I could see that. Okay. It's a natural progression. Okay. So broke up with the boyfriend. So you applied. How did you know where to apply? How did you find out about Club Med?
I was staying with my aunt at the time, and she was the president of a really big travel agency at that time, Carlson. And she had told me that, why don't I think about going to Club Med? And I told her she was crazy. So one day when he really pissed me off, that ex-boyfriend, I decided that, hey, let me pick up that Club Med catalog and call a number and see where do I send in an application. So I did that, and I thought, you know what, why don't I just make it a little spicy? So I did some modeling, for bathing suits. So I took a couple of those pictures, and I also took some of those photos. And then I also took some pictures of me with my monoski, because I did a lot of water skiing, and thought that maybe that would get somebody's eye. And sure enough, 3 days later, I interviewed, and the person who interviewed me asked me out on a date that night. So I realized that I got the job probably.
Well, there were different times back then, weren't they?
And then actually I thought to myself, I'm not going to accept it if they offer it to me.
So you basically had the job, and then you said, you know what? I'm not going to take it. Why?
Why? Because I was doing actually kind of crazy, but I was actually doing really well at the bank. And at the same time I was at it started at a junior college to start to begin the steps to becoming an attorney. So I started my schooling, and I just didn't think that it would be, why would I drop that when I was getting straight A's in school and I was doing well at the bank? I was just about to get about a $5,000 bonus. And this is 1985. So $5,000 was worth a lot of shoes back then. So I decided that I wasn't going to take it.
Did you know how much money a GO made back then?
Oh, hell no.
But you probably knew it wasn't anywhere near a $5,000 bonus.
Yeah, I figured that it wasn't a lot. But when I was told what it was, I thought that somebody pulled a prank. I didn't believe it. But I continued to work for another couple of weeks. And just by chance, I had bought a Club Med trip to go by myself to Sonora Bay, Mexico, Guaymas. And so I went ahead and I went. And the person that interviewed me that asked me on the date knew that I was going there on vacation and showed up for that week vacation.
No.
Oh yeah. Want a little bit of hanky panky there.
You had one of the first stalkers. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. That was my first stalker. And I was only 18 at the time. I didn't even know what stalking was at that point.
Oh boy.
So I had to kind of run around the village to not the resort, to not get in front of this person. And then when I left, I had a really nice, really great time. And I liked the setting. I found it really weird, these people walking around with hardly any clothes on that were working there, but okay. And then I went back, but I flew through, I went from Sonora Bay, the airport there, Guaymas, to Los Angeles. And there we had a 12-hour plane delay. And the LA Raiders were going through the airport, and it was so crazy. It was after having a week of peacefulness. It was like, oh gosh. And then when I flew into San Francisco, I had to get home. I had to go through all these stoplights. There was so much traffic and beep beep honk honk, and it was pouring down. And I said, okay, screw it. I'm going to Club Med, and that's how I. And then the next week, I left for Turks and Caicos.
Wait, back up a sec. So did you call your stalker to let him know you wanted a job, or did you call somebody else?
No, hell no. I called the Miami office, or not the, at that time it was New York. I called the New York office, the person who had originally called me, and told him that I was happy to accept the position.
So your first season was in Turks?
Correct.
Still in 1985?
1985, okay. November 1985.
Did you ask to do a certain job, or you just went, I'll do whatever job you give me?
Oh no, I gave them lots of choices. They had a choreographer position. I was also an avid horseback rider. So for at that point, about 15 years of my life, because we started when we were about 3 years old, we owned horses. So I applied for choreographer, horseback rider, water ski instructor, aerobic instructor, and they put me as a hostess.
I was just going to say that. So if I recall, that resort opened in 84. So you were there just practically when it was still brand new, 1 year after it opened.
Correct. And being that I came from a very small town in Northern California called Pinole, P-I-N-O-L-E, it was pretty small and everybody knew each other. I was quite virginal when I got there. So that's the part that I don't want you to be too shocked about. But I was very virginal when I arrived. So the first day I got there, I went to this beautiful beach and I saw all these topless people, and I thought that maybe something had happened, that they maybe lost them inside the washing machines, and they were in G-strings too. And I thought there must've been a problem with bathing suits. And I soon came to realize that since we were only 12 Americans working out of the entire team, I realized that I guess I needed to open up my eyes to the world. And that was my first and second day. And then on my fifth or sixth or seventh day, we had Hurricane Kate that came through.
Okay.
My first hurricane.
Yeah, that was going to be a question for later, but okay, we'll get back to the hurricane because I want to know about that. I want to know about that one.
Oh, yeah.
So we have a very similar story. We're both bankers. Okay. Our first seasons were in Turks and Caicos, and I had the same deal with my first topless person I saw, which happened to be a geo who was totally oblivious that she was topless. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't know where to look. And I was so uncomfortable. But that soon dissipates. It goes away.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Just real fast too.
So when you went to Sonora Bay, you saw what the geos were doing and they weren't getting days off and the hours. So you were still like, okay, I'm in, I'm gung ho. I know what to expect. Was it still hard for you to work that many hours a day with no day off?
Well, I, you know what? I didn't pay a lot attention to what the geos were doing. I only paid attention to them on their free time.
Well, you were trying to avoid a stalker in your defense at the same time.
Yes, correct.
As your whole week. So
correct.
Yes.
Correct. I spent a lot of time horseback riding, water skiing. And I think I went at the time, the week vacation, I went to one show. And the show that I went to, it's only because somebody came through the restaurant trying to enlist me to do a show. And since I had just finished teaching dancing for 5 years and performing numerous performances, the last thing I wanted to do is to get on stage. So I avoided like the plague, the theater. So that night though, I went and I saw the show and I thought it was completely amateurish. So I didn't think that it was worth it to go back to any shows. So I didn't. And some crazy man in the back of the theater who was wearing a long hair, cowboy boots, really tight shorts, and his nuts were showing, kept trying to say to me that, oh, isn't this a good show? And he was the choreographer. And I thought, oh my gosh, I need to run far from the hills. So I did not see any of the shows. And I didn't really pay attention to what they were working, the hours they were doing. So it was kind of a shock, my first week in Turks and Caicos.
Do you recall when you got to the airport, who the first GO you saw was?
Who was it? I remember. He was a traffic geo. I remember what his face, what he looks like. He was either Tahitian or I think he was Tahitian. His hair was completely wild. He looked like a cross between a Tahitian and Einstein. And it was, his hair was, it was no longer brown. It was kind of oranges at the ends because he had been in the sun so much. And he wasn't wearing a shirt, and he had a pretty nice upper torso, but he was wearing what's called a pari.
Oh, yeah.
He's okay. At the airport.
Okay.
Yeah. And he was wearing sunglasses, and he was on the tarmac. So when I came out of the plane, I wonder what kind of a place would allow people on their runways or on their tarmacs. But at that time, Turks and Caicos, the airport was just like a, only like two rooms. And you came in through a customs that was pretty cheesy. And then you went into the place where you got your baggage that somebody carried in, and then you left. So, yeah, I was kind of surprised about this guy, and he seemed all excited that I was arriving. So it was a little bit surprising. And then when I got to the resort, this awesome, awesome gal from the Bronx named Noreen Levy, she greeted me at the entrance telling me, "Angie, I'm Noreen from the Bronx and I'm your roommate." And I was like, wow, I didn't know anybody from the Bronx, me from California. So that's my first day. No, okay. I do now.
So, wow. Okay. So how long after you were doing your hostessing duties, did you think, since you can do it all, teach water ski and choreography, did you try to get out of that hostess job, or did you stay in that?
Yeah.
Okay. Were you successful that first season?
Oh God, no. The first night that I was there, some guy named Sean Gleeden, who actually is still a friend today, he and I ended up doing him. He was on. That's okay.
We'll bleep that out later. We'll bleep that out in post.
Okay. That's okay. He was a windsurfing, hot windsurfing geo, and he came up to me. I guess he had pegged me right away from the beginning, and he'd said to me, "Hey, we need you to do the show tonight." And me saying, being naive, was like, "Sure." So I came backstage that very first night that I arrived, and somebody handed me this really itty bitty little costume and said that, "Okay, here you go." And I'm like, "Well, what am I supposed to do?" He's like, "Oh, just make it up when you're on stage." I was like, "Oh, okay." So I just performed a solo my first night, didn't even know what the music was, and just did a performance for everybody. So after that night, I did try to get into choreography, but that it wasn't possible. I was 18 years old. So my second season in Martinique, I was with an awesome friend of mine, Suzanne DeVosto, who's still a very, very close friend of mine today. She was a choreographer from Brooklyn. And so I had no desire to become the choreographer because she was awesome and we were great friends. But I did try to get into teaching aerobics, and it wasn't until my fourth season that I was able to teach aerobics. And that's because I quit being a hostess mid-season.
Did you get a nickname your first season?
Baby.
Baby. Okay.
Yep, because I was a baby. I was very virginal.
Okay. Did that go
only
on your
for the first week?
Did you ever put that on your badge, or it was always Angie, but people just called you baby?
They just called me baby.
Okay.
I was the baby of the village.
Did anyone ever put you in the corner? Sorry, that's a Dirty Dancing reference for those of who got that. Okay, nobody puts baby in the corner. Yeah.
Nobody puts Sushi Bushi in the corner. Okay. And I was a baby, but I danced like a prostitute, so I was really popular.
Okay. I lost my train of thought there. Okay, I'm back.
Surprise. Told you not to be shocked.
Yeah. So in terms of GMs, I'm not talking celebrity GMs, regular GMs, were there any characters like GMs that stood out to you that your whole season there? I know ones
the
that kept
season?
Coming back or yes. Yeah. We're staying in the first season. Were there any memorable kind of like a Uncle Larry type GM that you recall? Like, was there still charters from New York then?
Yeah. Oh yeah. There was a charter from New York and there was a charter from California. The one GM that stands out in my mind was after my first month there, I met a guy named Gary Costello, who actually just connected with me on LinkedIn a couple weeks ago. And oh my gosh, he was hot. Oh,
really?
God, she was mouth-watering hot. And me at 18 years of age, I'm like, wow, this guy is just beautiful. And he was from Staten Island, and I had never tasted anything from Staten Island. So we've started to spend time together, and he came back. And then actually, that's why I left my first season, was because of him. So he was the one person that remains outstanding in my mind throughout the whole season because I tried to be really good while I was there because we were dating. And so I tried to be very discreet in the village. To not draw attention to myself, even though I was dancing like a prostitute. At 18 years of age, I wasn't really aware of all that I was doing. I tried to be a little bit more discreet that season.
When you say you were dancing like a lady of the evening, were you tap dancing like a lady of the evening? Or were you just doing the standard, I don't know what standard is anymore.
Since I had taught tap dancing, I did a lot of tap dancing. I did a lot of funk. But really, ballerinas, for example, they're beautiful just in the way that they move. It's very gentle. It's very elegant. And people find that very attractive. You add to that, I wasn't doing ballet, but sometimes I had to do pas de deux. Sometimes I had to do slow solos. Sometimes you had to do numbers that were made you look like a wildcat. And so when you're a dancer, you get into the role. And so if the role required me to be a sexy girl dancing behind a band, then I would be the sexy girl dancing behind the band. If it was you're wearing a costume because you're going to be like a showgirl, then I was that showgirl. So it's when you're dancing, you get into the character. And so when you do it well, it's very provocative. In some ways,
I would agree with that. Other than the topless women, and I'm assuming the men wearing barely their speedos, did you experience any kind of culture shock? Like, were there Europeans going to Turquoise back then?
Oh yeah, at that time it was almost all Europeans. There was still New Yorkers and California, but there was a big percentage of Europeans. And the culture shock was my very first day. I had never met anybody French before, and we were only 12 Americans. Jennifer Steidel, who was windsurfing at the time also, who through the years, we stayed in contact and met up many different occasions. She eventually went to work for the New York office and then for the Coral Gables office. There were 12 of us Americans. And so we were so few within a whole team of internationals and most of them French. So it was culture shock. The first night that I was in that show, for my first solo, backstage, everybody was kind of walking around almost naked. And I hadn't even, I had only had one boyfriend. With the sexual relationship before going to Club Med. So I was a little bit really taken aback and extremely in French pudique, very, very shy, physically shy. It took me quite a while to get used to changing in front of people because it was an open backstage. So the culture shock was first there that first night, and then on the beach, seeing those people, and then even just the openness. There's a very open culture with sexuality in other countries that we don't really have in the United States. It's not as much. And so I was, and again, coming from a small town in Panola, I was just not used to that. That was really, really culture shocking, big time.
Let's go back to the shows. Since you're already a dancer, were you ever put in a show that you did, but you didn't like? Do you remember the name of the show?
All the time.
Okay.
Yep. All the time. Okay. I won't say the choreographer's name because I remember her. I will never forget her, but because of what sometimes she had me do. But there was one show that I was so embarrassed to be on stage that I couldn't help but show it on my face. And she was so angry at me and really actually didn't even like putting me in the shows because I was good. Sometimes I had to fight for it. And then we had this guy come, his name was Raymond, awesome, awesome choreographer. And he came just to teach this one big show. And so he chose the main star of the show and he chose me and the female choreographer. Oh my Lord, she was livid. Oh my gosh, I paid for that dearly. Then she stuck me in every single horrible number that she could. So yep, I have had to be in some pretty awful numbers throughout the years. Awful numbers and awful costumes.
Well, you just took care of my next question because I was going to ask if any of the employees, well, for no reason, didn't like you, but I guess she thought she had a reason to not like you because you were talented.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
But that's not a reason, right? I mean, it's not your fault you were born a good dancer, right?
I had a lot of training, but I understand why she felt like that, because it was, when you're the choreographer in a village, in a resort, you're supposed to be the top banana. And how dare this little sushi bushi girl comes along and steals any thunder. I wasn't the only one who was talented that season. There was other people that were talented, but I didn't have really any inhibitions because I didn't know that I should have inhibitions. And I didn't know that I wasn't supposed to piss people off. So I was just myself. And I think I was a little bit not enough aware about people around me and how my actions could affect other people. And so I understand why she felt like that.
The choreographer is normally very happy when they find someone that could, you know, do an eight count and know what they're doing. Yep. And after telling them and memorize the steps, you know, they would always ask me and I wasn't good. So now you have a choreographer who knows you're good, but doesn't want to ask you to be in the shows because she's jealous. Yep. Wow. That's pretty weird, huh?
Yeah. But I had that, many seasons. So over the years, I got used to it and knew how to navigate around it.
See, whenever I met the choreographer, I'd always pretend I didn't know how to dance or I trip over my big feet, but they never bought it. You know, I was always thrown in something. So damn it. So
when you're an aerobic instructor and your body's always out there, people, and also as you go through, like after you get done with like your third season, your name starts to get out there and people start to know you. So I arrived in one season and I think, you know, his name, Ryan Leach. Ryan and I, we didn't know each other, and he became chief of village one day, which is the term for general manager. And the first time we met was in Copper Mountain. And the first thing he said to me, Angie, oh, you're that wildcat on stage. So you kind of get these reputations. You get these reputations as time goes by so that you put a foot in a village and some people, they're excited to snatch you up. And some people are like, because they're going to try to advance themselves with their own career, they want to hold you back a little bit. So I got used to it.
So you seem to have already known a lot of sports before you got there. Was there a skill that you didn't have that you learned there? I don't know, like sailing maybe, or maybe you didn't know how to sail, or was there something that you learned there while you were working there?
Well, sailing, I always wanted to be hanging. I always wanted a guy to sail me around. Same thing with the windsurfer, just to hang on the board and let the guy do all the work. So I liked participating in it, but I liked watching somebody else do that. I did get really heavily into volleyball, court and beach, also water polo, and Europeans are really good in ping pong. So I also got pretty good at ping pong too. And so basically, and I was already involved in softball before I had arrived. So from having all that sports background, plus I was a cheerleader in high school. So I loved basketball. I loved football. Touch football is what we would do in the villages. So long story short, I was kind of like a prime candidate to be on the sports team.
I would say yes. Yes, I would agree with that. Do you have any funny, clean, appropriate stories that happened that first season? It could be any, I don't know, like a funny mishap or I don't know. Okay, let's hear it.
I don't have a lot of clean stories, but
if you have one, yeah, even one is, it would be great.
So, Hurricane Kate, I was a hostess and I was told my very first day that we were selling what was called Barbie. So Barbies is what, there were three different colors of Barbies. And that's what the Barbies is what you use to purchase drinks at the bar. And they were pop beads. So they would wear as like a bracelet or a necklace. And you weren't permitted to leave your Barbie bag. So you had this big bag that held them all in there. You were always supposed to stay at the desk and you were never supposed to leave the desk. So when I was told, don't you ever leave the desk, I was petrified to leave the desk. So this one night, and it was about just when I first started, if we were to look it up, we would find the date. All of a sudden, I see people running around in all these different directions and kind of was wondering what was going on. And my roommate, Maureen from the Bronx, came running. She's like, Angela, what are you doing? There's a hurricane coming. And I said, well, I can't leave my bar beats. So she's like, oh, my God. So I'm watching everybody throw all these chairs inside the pool. They're taping up windows. And then one person came by and told me that the hurricane was supposed to be there in an hour and a half. We have received a telex, I guess. Back then, we didn't have faxes and we didn't have email. It was just telexes. So I'm thinking that, but I can't leave my Barbies. So finally, one person came by and was like, Angie, go ahead and leave. You can leave, you know. I'm like, yeah, but I'm going to get in trouble. I'm not supposed to leave my bar beads. So finally, somebody had gotten my boss who came to tell me that, no, I can go ahead and leave. So, okay. And we were put 12, 12 employees in a room, and we were all put on high. There was rooms were on the third floor. So 12 of us went to room, and then we were assigned a room, but of course we all switched rooms. So myself and Jennifer, and I remember it was a lighting guy named Day-Day, and several others, we were all together in our room. And in the middle of the night, when the hurricane was full blast and we were all drunk, Jennifer and I got the bright idea with Sean, who was my fling and my buddy. We got the idea that why don't we just go ahead and try to walk through the hurricane? We were drunk. It was, I think it was up to 112 mile per hour winds. So we went out of the room and we were walking. We tried to walk around the resort, which was really difficult because the winds were just crazy. And when we had to go back to the room because we just couldn't walk. But when we got back to the rooms, we were completely covered head to toe in what were called burrs. Burrs were these really sticky pointed stickers that pierced your feet like anything that were in the tall grasses. And we were covered head to foot in burrs. It took me almost a week to get all the burrs out of my hair and out of my clothing. In fact, I think I had to throw my socks away. And then a little bit later, because when the eye comes over, it gets to be a little bit calmer. I went outside to take a look and that was pretty good. I thought, okay, so this is going to get better. And then the winds picked up again when the hurricane moved off. And then the next day, the New Yorkers got really, really angry that there is a hurricane. And so there was this huge, beautiful bonfire on the beach that I thought was so gorgeous and beautiful. And when I got there to look, and I thought, wow, that's really big. The New Yorkers had taken all the slats from the beds and put it together on the beach, and they lit it because they were angry that there was a hurricane during their stay. So that's how we had a bonfire, was by having it was every single bed that the New Yorkers, or most of the New Yorkers, had that they put on the beach to light it up into flames. So that was an interesting moment that season.
Wait, the bonfire happened after the hurricane had passed?
Like, yeah,
the eye had passed over. The eye had passed over, and wow, yep. I've never heard someone doing that before after a hurricane passed. That's crazy.
Yeah, well, that was my second crazy bonfire. The other crazy bonfire was when we had a baggage truck in Turks blow up and caught on fire of 220 New Yorkers' baggage. That was another beautiful sunset. But this one, this bonfire, that was, I had just started. And because all the roads were flooded and the locals, who there was about 200, 220, 250 of them that worked in the resorts, because they couldn't come in, the GOs, the foreign staff, we were about 140 back then. We had to do all the cooking and cleaning and the maintenance, everything. So I went from being a hostess to being a housekeeper, to sweeping, to working in the laundry, folding sheets. So that was a pretty wild experience in my first couple of weeks working there.
Do you remember the name of this hurricane?
Hurricane Kate.
Kate. Ah, okay. Yep. Kate. All right. Okay. Wow. That's a great hurricane story. That beats mine. So I'm guessing you liked Crazy Signs.
You know what? Actually, I did like Crazy Signs because you got to dance all the way up until the very, very, very last night. I had worked 20 years. And the very, very last night was the first night that I didn't like doing Crazy Signs. And I thought I made the right decision to leave Club Med, because when you don't enjoy it anymore, it's not fair to the guest. That was the only night that I didn't like it in all of 20 years.
Did you have any favorite Crazy Signs? Top three, top number one?
My top Crazy Signs. So it'll be easier for me to say what I didn't like. So
La Bonne Franquette. On Elegant Night?
No, that was actually kind of crazy, but Agadu was a little bit boring and kind of slow. Agadu, Puss in Boots, Movie Cafe. That was kind of slow. So I didn't really like that one. I liked the original Crazy Science, which was about 40 different movements that you did.
Yes.
Really, yeah, I like those. I liked Soleil de Tropique. I liked Hands Up. I liked every single one that was added on. A Whoomp, There It Is. It didn't matter what it was. It involved dancing and I loved it.
Did we ever find out who indeed let the dogs out? Did anyone ever
Who let the out? Dogs out?
Anyone ever
that
find
was,
out?
Yeah, that I don't remember who it was, but that one came about in the 2000s.
Yeah, that was their Bahamian group, I believe, right? Baja Men?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. While you were in Sonora Bay, you spent a week there on vacation. You ate with GOs, I assume, right? Or were
no.
you still out trying to outrun the stalker and you were eating
I
in your
room? I was still outrunning the stalker.
And you had Kellogg's Flakes in your safe and that's what you were eating, right?
Yeah. I mean, okay. I only ate one meal a day.
Okay.
I only had one dinner the entire time that I was there, and it was because it was outside around the pool, and I just by chance was walking around outside by the pool. But I only had one meal per day, which was lunch, and I tended to come in towards the very end of the lunch because I was water skiing. And then after I water skied, I wanted to get warm and lay out on the beach. So I actually didn't even know that there was a rule that GOs, there was supposed to be only two GOs per table. I had no idea.
So as hostess, that's one of your jobs, what you're doing in the evening, you were placing GOs and everyone to sit. So you probably never really got the chance to eat with guests, right?
Four years, that's correct. Okay. Yep.
Were there any, that first season, were there any employees or managers that like really stood out to you in a positive way that you remember?
Oh,
like could be their work ethic or their sense of humor or.
Yeah, actually the chief of village.
Who was it?
His name is Luke Distelman.
Okay.
And the reason why he will always be an icon for me is because, and also we have JJ, who is the chief animation, is because the two of them got along really well together. But Luke could see that he's the one who started calling me baby. He knew that I was really young, but he didn't hold it against me. And he just encouraged me to, you know, continue to have fun, be crazy and enjoy the moment and keep going. And he didn't, he liked me being who I was because I was a kind of a character for the resort, and it's always good to have these kind of characters in the resort. So I was kind of like the underdog, and he rooted for me. So I think that was one thing that I always carried with me in the later years, was always kind of rooting for the underdogs in the villages and trying to bring forth personalities that maybe weren't as forthcoming, that I could kind of make them into a little star so that they would feel important and good about themselves.
Very good. Do you recall meeting any celebrities back
then,
that first season? Who?
Oh, the first season?
First season.
Gosh, I don't remember. First season, who came the first season? I don't remember if it was Brooke Shields.
Oh, wow. Blue Lagoon, huh?
Yeah, it was either Brooke Shields or Davy Jones. I don't remember which one it was.
Davy Jones from the Monkees?
Yeah, I think it was Brooke Shields, and Davy Jones was when I was in Sandpiper, I think. Sandpiper, Florida. Yeah, that
tracks about right. I would say Brooke Shields would go to Turks and a Davy Jones would go to Sandpiper. Yeah, I could see that.
There's actually a lot of famous people that I met over 20 years, but I
Well, for people who don't know, are you able? Do you think you're able to name all your positions right now if I asked you, starting from that first?
Yeah.
Okay, give it to me.
You mean the villages or the positions?
No, positions. Like every position you've had since hostess. Yeah. Are you able? Okay, go.
How long do you have?
Oh boy. Okay. I thought it was something you can do on two hands. Okay, so I guess we're our feet, and okay.
No, it'd be my hands and my feet times two.
Oh boy. Well, if you could rattle it off without thinking of it, then let's do it. Okay.
All right. So I'm going to go through the resorts. So I did hostess. I also worked in the Annex restaurant as a hostess. So that was part restaurant. I then went on to be aerobics, kayak, and land sports. I then went on to be chief hostess. I continued on with aerobics, solely aerobics, and then on to solely as land sports. I also did snorkeling. I also ran picnics. I think I said kayaking.
Yes.
I also did planning. I did transportation. I worked behind the front desk as reception. I was in charge of an annex restaurant. I did, gosh, I have to go through all of them. Chief of sports, chief of animation, choreographer, even animator, if you can believe that. I was in charge of a village annex. I even had to do golf, even though I didn't know how to play golf because it was a mini putt. So, and I know I still to this very day, I have no idea how to hold a golf club, but I was the golf club instructor. I was also a part-time bike instructor in Switzerland, also a swim instructor, a fitness instructor in Waltuco. And what else did I do in Switzerland? I think I named them all in Switzerland also. Because I did several villages in Switzerland. I think I named them all in the Bahamas. I think I named them all in Turks. Oh, I had to be costumier. And even at one point, I had to run the lights when we didn't have a light engineer in one village. And that was really scary because I screwed it all up, but I did it anyway. I don't know if I would call this a position, but later on when we had bagagistes, when we didn't have somebody, I had to step in for bagagistes. So I had to do that. I even had to be, thanks to Laurent Clement, which I could have killed him for that. I had to also be in the food and beverage team at one point. Had to do unload barges. In fact, that was our season with us in Columbus, Greg.
Yes.
That lovely food and beverage director. What else did I do? I did have to work behind the bar a couple of times. Let me see, did I get all of them? Oh, and I've had to do housekeeping. I also had to work in the, I don't know if we would call it, I don't even remember what the name was, but it was where they did all the linen and all the sheets. I had to work there also. I think I got most all of it. I never had to teach tennis, thankfully.
Oh, so basically everything but tennis. Okay.
Yeah. And actually I never had to teach, horseback riding instructor also. I think I already said bikes. That was, yes. Yep. I already had to do that. And there was also what you call vitete, which was mountain bike. I only had to do that 2 days when my mountain bike geo was out sick. So I had to do that. It was pretty scary. I think that's about it.
When you and I met at Columbus Isle in 99-2000, that was my third time going there. And you were, I believe, a stagiaire chief of village? Like you were promo track?
What?
Or how did they call that again?
They called it promo chief of village. And
yes.
There were two of us put in the village together.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah. That's when I met you having heard about you because Hansel Moss, always talked about, the good old days and the good team. So you're someone's name I heard. And then that's where we met that winter season. So,
yep.
Yeah. That was a special time for me, even though it was my third time there. I think there was a really good team assembled there. There was a lot of talent, yeah. I find.
Well, you definitely made my season. That was because that was a rough season. Being a female promo chief of village when I had at the current chief of village that was there, I won't name names, and also the chief of sports who was there, and I won't name his name, even though he contacted me just this week. But the two of them being female and American in a male-dominated French company, it was very, very hard to get your foot ahead. And they gave me a lot of pushback and you always helped me through those moments. So yeah, that was the season that I was a promo chief of village. And I was supposed to one season that I had to do as promo chief of village. The season that I came from was also, that was in Agadir, Morocco. That was in charge of the village annex. And that I had to prove myself that season also. You had to go through a couple seasons of tests before they put you into what was called the stage, the 6-month stage, but I bypassed that and went directly to Sherat Team Malaysia from our season,
yes,
from Columbus.
That's right. I remember now. Yeah, I went to Australia and you went to Sherat Team.
Right. I went directly from the village. I flew to Los Angeles. I hosted a meet. I got off the plane, went directly to the beach, hosted a triathlon. Went to see Bob Christensen, who was famous for Circus for Club Med, to see a little small backyard performance. Then I went to dinner in Hollywood and then I immediately left at 9 o'clock, got on a flight to Tokyo, slept on the bottom of a plane and then went from Tokyo to Sri Lanka and then from there to Sheraton and arrived and was chief of village from that point on.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
So you said that you told us earlier that you went to Martinique for your second season. So
correct.
Did you not want to rest after Turks? Like you went from the frying pan to the fire, I would think. You went from one crazy singles village to another. Did you request Martinique or that's where they sent you?
No, I had quit Clamette after the Turks and Caicos.
Okay.
Because it was like, I just was too shocking. And I went with my girlfriend, Noreen, to the Bronx. Of course. That's what every California
girl
does.
You went with your roommate, Noreen, who's from the Bronx, to the Bronx.
Yep.
Did you have any culture shock in the Bronx?
You bet. And okay. That's why I went back to Club Med 3 months later.
Okay. Did you ask? So you just asked for anything and you got lucky enough to get sent to Martinique?
Well, by that time, Jennifer Steidel, who had worked in the New York office and who I did my first season with, she was then working out of the New York office. And I think she was working out of the New York office. She either was or she helped me get back into a village. And I think it was Jennifer. Yeah. I was proposed. She gave me a couple different choices. And actually Martinique wasn't my second village. It was my third village. My second village, I went, we were doing the reopening of St. Lucia. It had a disastrous first 6 months of an opening. The village wasn't prepared. So they shut it down. And then we opened it with a fabulous chief of village, Jose Aliel. So I went from the Bronx to St. Lucia just to get away. And that was at that time, that was a single village also. So actually my first, several of my first years was only in single villages.
Okay. Are you still in touch with the stalker? No, just kidding.
No, okay. Just only on Facebook.
Okay. So my last question I like to ask is, and you can answer it honestly, did you find anything magical about your first season, or do you prescribe the word magical to another season? Like, I know they're all different in some ways, but do you consider it because it was your first one? Was there really, I use the word magical for my first season because it was. Do you have a season in particular that was magical, or was it the first season?
I had a lot of magical seasons.
Okay, lucky you.
Yeah, I did. I had in 20 years, I had a lot of magical seasons. There were fewer bad ones than there were good ones. And there were some that were just beyond magical. There were several of those. So I there's always, so the thing that doesn't change is, for example, when we don't say goodbye as geos, we're just like, okay, we'll see you later, because we know that somehow or another, we'll probably end up in another village together. So basically is the people didn't change a lot. You still saw around some of the same faces when you went village to village. It was the scenery that changed, but what made the scenery so magical, it wasn't what you were seeing, but it was the team that you were there with. So for example, I did 3 seasons in Turks and Caicos. And one season was incredibly awful, and 2 others were just fantastic. And so your magic came from the people that you were really working with, and the village looked different depending on who it was that season. So I had a lot of magical villages, the first one being included.
Well, that's great to hear. I like that there's still magic in the world, you know?
Yes, there is.
Well, Angie, I think we covered it all about your first season and then some. Yep. Unless you got some other, you know, story you want to pull out of your pocket and hit me with, but
no.
I think we got
first
it all.
First season is good, and second season, we don't need to even go into the second season, because that was one of my second magical season. Oh my, one of my favorites of all time was St. Lucia. So nope, that's good. We covered our first season.
Okay. Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. I really, really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
To me that you said yes. I thought I was going to have to chase you for months, but you're like, nope, let's do it. I said, okay, wow, great. Thank you.
No, because I think, Greg, that first you and I will be family for life, and I'd do anything for you. And you're part of the magic that I knew and will always know. And I think that I would, so when I am considered a different breed in where I live. I live near San Francisco because I'm very different minded. I'm very open-minded. I accept everybody of all cultures. It doesn't matter where you are, where you're from, I accept you. If you accept me, boy, I need to accept you. But I think that when you work for a company like Club Med and the crazy times that you go through, there is no better education in life and how to open up your mind so that you open up your horizons. Because if you open up your mind, you open up your horizons, and you guide and you drive your car down a path of trying to always get a foot in front of the other, you are going to have a great life. If you remain closed-minded and think that the only thing that exists is my little world here in my hometown, your life is not going to be as fulfilled as what it can be. So I would always encourage any person whatsoever that is even thinking about doing something like this, that they absolutely jump and go for it. Because if some little young lady who had never stepped foot outside of her comfort zone, a good old little tiny Pinole, was a well-known cheerleader and dance instructor in that town, to go and then travel the world for 20 years and been over and over 55 countries. And I was paid to do that. You know, it's something that is to be cherished. So I think that this is why we needed to do this.
Wow. Could not have said that better myself. I want to thank you for sharing your story. We'll always have Splash Mountain. And ladies and gentlemen, that was the legend, Miss Angie Boucher. Angie, thank you so much. So much. You want to say goodbye to everybody?
Yep. If there's a part 2, I'll be there. Big hugs to everybody. You're in good hands with Greg. Definitely listen to his podcast, because he will definitely have the topics that will be an inspiration to your life and make you feel good during tough times. So Greg, love you. Love all of you. Always happy to be there for you. I'm Angie Boucher, Boucher on Facebook. Otherwise, big hugs to everybody and take care.
You heard it. Bye, everybody. See you later.
Bye, everybody.